You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, January 23rd, episode 3890, brought to you today by Worm Flooring. Good morning, horse people.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We have a familiar face joining us in our Where Are They Now segment.
Voice, familiar voice at this point.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry about that. But she was our, as far as we can remember, she was our first guest here on the show. She's also one of the first guests on a bunch of different shows in the Horse Radio Network, but we haven't talked to her in a long time, and that's Olympic eventer Gina Miles. I can't wait to talk to her again. She's so much fun. And then I am so glad you're here today, because if I had to dive into this one myself, I would be out of my league after the first question. And that is, we are going to be talking to a neurobiologist by the name of Dr. Steve Peters and clinician J.P. Dial about their groundbreaking horse brain science clinics. So this is deep horse brain science stuff. And Jamie, I can't wait for your questions. Also, we're going to find out, has Jamie's new horse finally arrived? And then we also have Auditor Jennifer in our post show. She's the one that helped us set up these clinicians, Dr. Steve and J.P. Dial, to come on and talk to us, because she's having one of those clinics at her farm in Michigan. So she's coming on to talk to us more about that. She's been on the show before, but we're glad to have her back. And then a news wrap from the weekend. Are you ready for this, Jamie? We had...
Oh, I don't know if I can take any more news.
We had deadly avalanches in the west, a bomb cyclone in the northwest, a major blizzard in the northeast, which, by the way, some of our listeners are posting pictures of, and they're buried in snow. Mexico's imploding. And meanwhile, in Florida, it's reported over the weekend that there are two more destructive types of termites that are making their way across the state. So there we go. In good news... The stories at the Olympics were really cool, and the ice hockey and the skating and all of that.
Oh, hockey, come on!
Both in overtime. You know, the Canadians haven't been happy with us lately because of the whole politics thing. Can you imagine how they're going to hate us now? Sorry, Canadians.
Did you see the picture, the video of the gold medal winning team in the locker room jumping up and singing as loud as they could to Toby Keith? I was like, yes!
I will say that the NBC did a good job of putting the Olympic gold medal wrap-up show together every day. So all I had to watch was the winning, you know, skiing things and the winning skating things. And so I didn't have to watch them all. I just could get wrapped up with 10 minutes at the end of the day and see all the winners. It was great. I loved that. Because you know what? I don't know a thing about skiing. I did it once very unsuccessfully in my life, and I just don't know anything about it. So
it hurts when you fall. That's all you got to know.
I learned that. I did learn that.
Then you're good.
So, and you know, the ice skating, you know, just the stories were pretty incredible this time.
That's what makes the Olympics fun. I love Olympics, just any of it.
Well, we're going to talk a little more about Olympics later on in the show. And we're going to be talking about the Summer Olympics that are coming up. But in the meantime, we have some daily winnings to do. I have a few daily winnies. No birthdays today. So, Auditor Charity McClung, thank you for posting your amazing ski drawing pictures. She's from Wisconsin. Excuse me. And they have a ski drawing competition there that goes on over multiple days. It looks like a serious event.
Looks so fun.
And I don't know if it was her daughter that was riding the black gypsy that was absolutely incredible looking in the snow. But they were great pictures. Thank you for doing that. Also, our Auditor Heather, who lives here in Ocala, had two new Friesian babies. So I think last week, both babies were born, and they're so cute. They're so adorable. You think Friesians are cute. I mean, wait till you see Friesian babies.
Oh, Friesian babies are like the basset hound puppies of the horse world, you know, just like the cutest.
Yes. And, you know, black as black could be, and they're just very cute. And we have a brand new auditor, Daryl. Daryl wrote me an email over the weekend. Welcome, Daryl. We're glad you're here.
He's really glad you're here. You're a man.
Very glad. I was shocked to get an email from a man. I was like, oh, this has to be a spam email. No, it was a real listener named Daryl. I'm so happy to see that.
I love it when people make posts on Facebook and they say they did something because they're marching towards death, because as you know, we are all marching towards death. So do the thing. So congratulations, Nikki bought her new horse at Mastermind. So congratulations. And then I have something else to tell you. Do you remember Miami Moonlight, Roy, the horse that I took off the racetrack, got them to adopt it, to send it to Horse and Hound. And then he came here and I have had him for several months. And then I decided he was ready to be adopted and he got adopted by a woman. And then she left him here for a month for training. She lives in Arkansas, like Northwest Arkansas. So she picked him up a couple, you know, probably about 3-4 weeks ago and took him home, and I hadn't heard anything. Well, I got an email last night, and it is from her, and it says the subject line is Roy. Remember, we named him Roy because he was like Roy Kent season one, and he was really grumpy when he came, and my whole goal was to get him to Roy Kent season three when he was nice, and we did. And that's when I felt like he could be adopted. And so she kept the name Roy. And so I got this email that finally got to ride Roy yesterday and today. He was perfect.
Hey.
Weather was horrible, cold and really windy. And you would have thought he had been ridden every single day. He is everything I hoped for and more. I love, love, love him. Thank you for saving him. He has it. The thing that makes horses great.
Oh, love those emails.
I love that. What a cool, that horse is particularly special to me. So to get an email like that is just so cool. So anyway, congratulations to Roy, Miami Moonlight, and his new mama who just loves him and thinks you're meeting a boy.
Is that one that you pretty much ran out in the track and said, stop that horse, I'm taking it home?
Yes, that's the horse. I saw him in the paddock and it was like, that's right. Watching Seabiscuit walk through the fog. I was like, he has to come home with me.
She called the trainer and said, I know he's not ready to retire, but I want him.
I called the trainer the next morning. The track closes at 10. I called him at 10:05. And I was like, hi, I'm calling up Miami Moonlight. But you know what? It's funny. We were just talking about him. You don't say. Okay, great. So,
yeah, that was serendipity, that whole thing.
Yeah. Or I particularly calculated on my part, but whatever, it's fine.
I haven't talked to you all weekend, so I don't even know the answer to this. Did your horse from California finally get there? What's the story? I didn't see any pictures, so I'm assuming not.
I have had a psychotically crazy week, and half of my issues have been resolved. And the second half, which is this horse arriving at my farm, has not been resolved. Okay. So remember, he was supposed to ship out last Monday.
But they were having terrible weather. So
terrible weather. So they kept pushing. And every day I'd be like, is he on the trailer? No, tomorrow. And then, is he on the trailer? No, tomorrow. So then finally, Friday night, I get a video of him loading into a trailer. And I was like, oh, thank God.
Friday night. It's Monday morning.
Listen, I'm not done. Okay. So Saturday, I text the guy who they gave me the hauler's number. And just so you know, I never do this. Like, but the English was not very forthcoming when I was trying to book travel. And I was like, I'll get travel. Oh, no, my friend. And the broker was like, yes, we use this guy all the time. Like, he's very good. He's delivered horses to North Carolina for us. It's going to be fine. He's going to be in good hands. I was like, okay, well, because I couldn't figure out how to get anybody else over there. So anyway, they load the horse up on Friday night. On Saturday, I start texting him. And I'm like, hey, how's the trip going? This is the owner of Chupaloso. I just want to see how he is. And then nothing. And so I texted the next hour on the hour, and I texted every hour until 8 p.m. on the hour. Where is the horse? What is going on? And finally at 8 p.m., I said, listen, I will stop bothering you if you would just write back. I don't understand. So anyway, they then calls. We spoke a lot of Spanglish
together. I need to get you a Rosetta Stone language course for Spanish.
I know horse stuff, but like verbs and stuff, conjunctions escape me. So anyway, I found out that what they did was they loaded him up and took him to his ranch, and they're shipping in other horses from around the state that are all going to go east. And so they had to ship him to the shipper's ranch where all the horses are meeting. And then they would load. And he's like, I'm going to give them Sunday all to rest. And then we load up Monday morning.
Communication would have been lovely, right? I mean,
that's what I am always super polite, especially when like things like I have something in the.
Well, he has your horse. You limbo, you know?
Glenn, all the hellfire that rages inside me that never makes its way out made its way out. Oh. People always have no filter. I'm like, no, you don't understand how much filter I have. Like what? And then it just all lost it. And I was like, really upset. I was like, I just don't understand why you can't communicate with me. Like nobody knew this. I called the broker and I was like, the horse isn't even shipping out yet. He shipped to the facility. And he was like, I had no idea. I'm so sorry. I was like, never recommend this guy ever again. Anyway, so they're supposed to be heading out this morning. I've already texted him and received nothing.
And so he should get to your place tomorrow?
Well, no, they don't drive at night. He will be stopping tonight somewhere in New Mexico. Ginger was like, let's get in the car, meet him in New Mexico. And I was like, no, because we go to New Mexico and not know where state to go.
He'll get there and he'll have left already.
Yeah, and we go on already, or they get there in 2 days. I was like, there's just no way to do it. But I was like, we'll just go get in the car and get him. So at some point, she's like, let's get in the car. Let's go. Plug up the
get her done.
I know. So apparently he's going to travel to somewhere in New Mexico. And then he's going to overnight today to New Mexico, tomorrow to El Paso. And then he wasn't sure if he's going to go from El Paso to Dallas or Oklahoma. I don't know. And I'm like, just bring me the horse, please, God. This poor guy. And I mean, his castration is scheduled already. I'm canceling everything. I'm just going to let him heal. And I mean,
he's going to have to be in quarantine if he's hauling with a bunch of other horses.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, now that he's been to like three different facilities, the trailers,
15 days for him.
Oh, man, he is going in the round pen and not coming out. Bless his heart. So, yeah, I'm going to have to.
But he has a roof now in the round pen.
I know. It's like, I'm like, this is the fanciest stallion stall ever. Perfect.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of when they said, throwing him with a bunch of horses. You don't know who those horses are. You don't have any idea.
And thank God I have him insured. That is the one thing I'm like, oh, God, please.
I am so sorry you didn't get your horse yet. I was thinking about you. I was going to text you over the weekend, but I thought, she doesn't have the horse. I don't want the answer.
I am just in like sort of weird limbo of just numbness. I just can't. I'm so grateful for the show to like wake me up and get me out of that waiting and watching an anxious world, because I'm just like, my anxiety is through the roof and I can't even, my armpits are sweating right now. And like, I just.
Well, I'm glad I have some good guests planned for today. They'll take your mind off of it.
I know. I'm so excited to get started. I just love my horse. I just love my horse.
I just signed up for Rosetta Stone for you, so you can listen in your car while you're driving.
Daylight dollar short, Glenn. Thank you.
Discover the worm flooring advantage today, and now is the perfect time to get it done over the winter when you're not using your trailer. Worm flooring offers a seamless sealed system that eliminates the common problems of traditional floors, saying goodbye and to endless scrubbing under the mats, pulling the mats up. Sucks. It's incredibly easy to clean and maintain, and its slip-resistant surface provides a secure environment for everyone, human, and horse. Unlike temporary solutions, worm flooring is tough, durable, and fully sealed against liquids, protecting your underlying floor for years. Choose a permanent, beautiful solution. You can even choose colors, all kinds of colors, for your trailer. Invest in worm flooring today. Visit wormflooring.com. That's wermflooring.com to transform your barn, trailer, or workshop.
Join us as we chat with past guests to find out, where are they now?
Well, our next guest is an Olympian. She first appeared on the Stable Scoop radio show on episode 12, which was released, are you ready for this, October 23rd, 2008. In this early episode, she discussed her experiences winning the silver medal in eventing at the 2008 Hong Kong Olympics, and she was the first guest we had here on Horses in the Morning a couple years later, has been on many of our shows, and that's why we have her back for Where Are They Now? Hey, Gina Miles.
Hello, how are you?
Good. It's so good to hear your voice again.
And it's good to be here. It's been a while.
I have pictures with Gina, but it was from 17 years ago, and I can't find them. Big surprise.
There you go. We look exactly the same. Just in case you were wondering, we basically look the same.
Exactly the same.
Weird.
Gina, what are you up to now out there in California?
Well, my big project has been developing a property from scratch. I purchased 10 acres 4 years ago and naively thought all I needed was some hot tape fences and an arena. And 4 years later, here we go.
Did it have anything? Was it just land or?
It had a house.
Okay, good.
just land. It did have a house. The house had not been lived in for 10 years, however.
Smelled
so
good,
talk
huh?
About a, talk about a fixer-upper. So there you go. We had to make the house livable. And then pretty much since then, we've been doing upgrades little by little as time and money allow.
And you're a trainer and instructor. Are you also involved in Pony Club too?
You know, I try to be. I am an instructor. I have a great group of Cal Poly students and young people and older people, a really nice group of people, and try to do as much as I can with Pony Club. We're trying to get a riding center going and be involved as we can. I've got some great girls that are in Pony Club that come and ride here. So
and
try to help them out.
Mostly still teaching eventing or a little bit of everything?
You know, we loved eventing. Obviously, that is our main thing that we do is eventing. But we have Paso Robles Horse Park that is here just 15 minutes from where I live. And they have a great series of hunter jumper shows. Both they have a really low cost entry level schooling show series that they do that also includes dressage classes as well as some B rated shows and some A shows. And so for bringing new people into the sport, the hunter jumper shows are a great model. So we take advantage of that as we can to help supplement, obviously, the eventing being our life passion.
That's amazing because, you know, unfortunately, eventing is getting harder and harder to find and more expensive. And to have like these local hunter shows to get these kids out and get show experience and try on their fancy clothes.
And
it's so fun.
Yeah. Well, even the young horses, the mileage that we find that they get, you know, we sort of use the events then as the test of where we are, you know, as opposed to the training process, because we can go to the B shows and they have a young horse program at our B shows where the horses get 5 free classes plus a discounted stall. So for mileage for a young horses, you can go show them in 5 classes. They get some experience. They get the wiggles out. And you haven't blown a whole eventing weekend, you know, doing that. So we're finding it's really helpful for the young horses. They have the outreach classes for the young people so they don't have to join any memberships. It's just a nice way to get people hooked on the sport. But then we drag them out. We have them jump judge for cross country. So they get the taste and the excitement. So we're not trying to push them just to be in the hunter jumper world. We're using it as a nice stepping stone.
That's the reason all the high level eventers are right now in Ocala where I live. They're here doing jumper shows and dressage shows.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we started that when George Morris coached us at the World Equestrian Games. That would have been 2002 before, you know, a lot of your listeners were born. you know, that was when the show jumping was getting more technical. And George Morris really urged us to get out to the rated jumper shows and do the jumpers and get the experience with the technicality and the detail and, you know, the sophistication that the show jumping courses bring to our sport.
Did I read in Sidelines magazine that you're dreaming about 2028 LA Olympics? Did I read that? Do you have a horse that's dreaming about it?
Word on the street might be I am going to make a bid for LA 2028.
Yay!
Thank you. I know. You know, it's funny. 1984, the Olympics was in Los Angeles. I was 10. I knew nothing about what the Olympics was. My mom doesn't know. We didn't know where cross country was. And I saw cross country and fell in love. And that was my dream. I'm going to go to the Olympics. I'm going to do it in eventing. And so as you get older, you start planning, well, when am I going to retire from doing this crazy cross country thing? And I always sort of thought LA bookend to the career, you know, LA Olympics is what started the career and bookending it with Los Angeles would be the complete of the Cinderella fairy tale. And, you know, I was really just too wrapped up from the time that I bought the property. I was just so immersed in just trying to survive every day. And then it's lightened up. You know, now we have a routine. We know how things function. I've got some good help. And people started asking me, well, don't you want to go to the Olympics again? And I said, well, yes, of course I do. I just need a horse. And so a few people have really just jumped in and been are buying into the dream, supporting the dream, are in 100% of the dream. So I've got a great team of people that helped me buy a horse. And here we go. We're going to see what happens.
Are you going to allow to talk about the horse? You can't leave us hanging like that. Come on, Gina.
Well, okay. So I rode with Eric Duvander's out here in California now. You know, he coached the team for years. So Eric Duvander's out here in California, and I took a clinic with him. And the first thing he said to me since I showed up with a gigantic horse was, well, you need to get a horse your own size, which, you know, Jimmy Wofford has been telling me that from the beginning. So, you know,
yeah, Jimmy McKinley Wofford was from like the almost, moment. Wasn't McKinley almost 18 hands?
Yes. Yes. He was every bit of 17.3. And, you know, he's what I had to ride. Beggars can't be choosers. You know, I went with it. But I think from the beginning of time, Jimmy and others have been telling me to get a smaller horse. So I finally did as instructed. And I bought a lovely 16-hand horse, and we bought him in Argentina. We actually were in Argentina last spring horse shopping. This was our second time to Argentina. And the guy that helps me at the barn has nicknamed him Jumping Man because he loves jumping out of his field. And we'll jump out of his field and then jump out of the next field and then gallop around the cross-country course jumping jumps in the cross-country field. So we know he loves to jump. We know he loves to jump. And
that's a blessing and a curse. We had one of those. And it's a
I guess I have to increase the size of my fences, build some taller fences here. I'll put that on my to-do list.
Now, work is never done when you own your own farm. God.
Yeah. No, it's never done. So, it's never done. You have to love it. You have to love it.
You would have to be in qualifications. God, is it next year already? End of next year?
Yes. Yes, we're on a very tight timeline.
I was just going to say that's coming up quick, isn't it?
Real quick. He's behind the timeline, but he is 10, so he's mature enough to come along quickly. And he has his most experiences in the show jumping. He was doing a meter 20 before I got him, so he has show jumping experience. He just needs to add in, you know, obviously the cross country. He seems to be very brave, though. He's very brave. He's got an amazing gallop. He's very fast, as he demonstrated when he got loose at Ramtap and ran around the property. I'm like, wow, you're really fast.
Do you notice the one phase she has not mentioned at all in this entire conversation, Jamie?
Yeah, dressage, baby. Come on.
I am struggling. He's a beautiful mover. He is a beautiful mover. And I had looked at a couple of different horses that were really quite nice, but just weren't going to have good enough movement. You know, why get there when you're why bother getting there if you can't even be competitive enough in the dressage? So, but the horses down there, they don't do any dressage. So, you know, we're bringing that in. But I've got Lori Doyle, who helped me with McKinley for the Olympics in 2008. She's now coming back through the area. So she helped us last weekend. And so we're getting moving in the right direction.
So you talked about the size, right? Everybody's been bugging you to get the smaller horse. What have you noticed as a difference having a smaller horse that you're looking at taking to that high a level? Is there a difference other than getting on and off is easier at our age?
Yeah, you're right. Getting on and off. You know, scope is scope. And sometimes those little ones are power packs, you know, and when I was trying him out and we just kept raising the jumps, he just kept jumping bigger. You know, it's no effort at all. So I do like the compact ones. You know, it's a bit like riding a sports car. You know, you're certainly super maneuverable. And honestly, that's going to be super important for LA. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the cross country there and the committee making the decision not to have it at Galway and putting it at Santa Anita. And I have a feeling the cross country is going to feel a lot like Hong Kong. You know, in Hong Kong, we were on such a twisty, tight, small piece of land. And I have a feeling this is going to feel like that. There's going to be a lot of turning. It's going to be a very agile course as opposed to, you know, a nice gallopy Bamington or Burley or Kentucky where you just have so much galloping room. I have a feeling that's not going to feel like that. And this agile, smaller, agile, maneuverable horse, I think is going to be an advantage.
Speaking of LA, what are you hearing? I haven't been following it very closely. Are they going to be getting stuff done to hold this Olympics, or is it going to be behind? What's the story?
They're always behind. Well,
I went to an LA 2028 event. They hosted former Olympians for sort of a kickoff party at the LA Coliseum. So we got firsthand to meet all day long with the president, the chairman, the organizers of the committee, Janet Evans, who's a huge on the Olympian, former Olympian side of the organizing events. They're pretty amazing. I mean, they've got it together. They have so much infrastructure already in Los Angeles. So unlike some of the other games where they're doing a lot of building, there's so much infrastructure there. It feels like they are really on top of it.
And
now Santa Anita is, people are a little bit skeptical about how the cross country is going to work there, but I'm confident, they're going to have a good budget behind it and they're going to get creative. And like I said, other than it, I think it's going to be on a small piece of land and it's going to feel twisty turny.
I was definitely shocked that it wasn't going to be in Galway. I mean, that just seems like such a no brainer.
Right. I know. It is really disappointing. I know they went into so much effort and I know they had a great plan in place. And so it is super disappointing. But, when you take a step back, and people are probably going to shoot me for this. When you take a step back and you look at it from a non-equestrian point of view, which is hard for us because we're so immersed in the equestrian, and clearly as equestrians, the best choice for us was Galway. But when you take a step outside of our little equestrian world that we live in, for the general public and what the Olympic mission and motto means outside of the equestrian world, I can see why they chose Santa Anita. I'm not saying it's the best choice, but you can see from a non-equestrian lens where that came from. It's accessible. Yeah. There's a lot of infrastructure there already in terms of the grandstands. And I mean, just things like feeding people, feeding people.
Well, and
people
transportation. LA's a mess anyway.
Correct. And, being a part of the Olympics, and when you come home from the Olympics, especially when you've won a medal, you can reach so many non-equestrians. I mean, it really is a bridge that exposes our sport. And I know it feels sad that we can't have it at Galway, but being able to reach the general public and get the exposure of our sport to the public, I mean, that's what's going to make equestrian sports last, is we have to expand our reach. We have to be more interesting. And when the general public sees us, they're fascinated. So we really need to be focusing on that outreach and how we expose more people to the love of our sport.
Do you watch the other Olympic sports? Did you watch Winter Olympics this year? By the way, you're absolutely right, because the only time any of us ever watch figure skating is once every 4 years. So
Correct. I do love the figure skating. I didn't watch a ton of I do love watching the Olympics, and it was something I always did with my mom growing up, that Olympic motto plays. It's very inspiring, although I didn't watch that much of it this year. But I do love watching the other sports and connecting with other athletes. When I went to that LA Olympian event, there's a lot of really cool Olympians there, and you kind of fangirl out. And you're like, oh, my God.
I mean, this was
it's Nadia Comaneci. Like, I got my picture taken with Nadia Comaneci. And I mean, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And this Olympics was fun to watch, only because there were so many cool stories there, too.
Lord, I don't need to learn any more about curling, though. For real.
curling was the talk of the town, wasn't it?
It really was.
So let me ask you about your Olympic medal. Is it hanging up somewhere? Is it hiding in a drawer? You have no idea where it is.
Gosh, I do know where it is. It is hiding in a drawer. Although a good friend of mine made me a case for it. And honestly, since I moved, when I bought this property and moved, I really still haven't unpacked like all my stuff that I had in my display case. Maybe next winter.
How long have you been there now? 4 or 5 years? 6 years?
4 years ago.
Yeah. Not moved in yet. Well, the funny thing is you realize all that stuff packed in my garage, I guess a lot of it I really just don't need anymore. How about that?
Yeah. Amazing how that works. Moving forces you to deal with crap.
It sure does. Or, Gina, or you have a big enough garage, you avoid it.
Although I swear, if I had an Olympic medal, I'd just roll out with it every day. Like, come on, kids. Okay. Posting trot. And I'd be wearing it just all the time.
Well, The funniest thing, I mean, I'm pretty incognito about it. And my daughter is running the Cal Poly eventing team. She's the president of the Cal Poly eventing team. And we have eventing team rides, and the kids come up and they get a team ride and they ride and whatever. And one of the kids said to Taylor, "Wait, what? You didn't tell me your mom was an Olympian?" It's like, oh yeah, no big deal.
Okay. You just freaked me out, because the last time I think we talked to you, you were in the school line dropping her off.
Well, remember how many years you said it's been. The funny thing is, she's now my youngest is 20.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. You and literally, one of the times we talked to you, were in the school line in the car.
I believe it. Well, I don't have to do that anymore. Now she's in her third year at Cal Poly. And and my son is living down in Los Angeles. So.
Well, wow. Will you keep in touch? Well, let's talk a little sooner about your Olympics run-up, okay? Let's keep in touch about that.
Yes, I will keep you posted.
We would love. What's the horse's name again?
His name is Kodiak.
Kodiak. Oh, I love that name.
Kodiak.
Okay. Mm-hmm, all right. So we're going to have you back to talk about Kodiak's progress.
Yes.
And we are going to be your, what's it called? Your accountability partners.
There. I love it. Okay. I love it. You got to set a goal. You got to say it out loud.
That's right.
And you need everybody to hold you accountable.
All right. So what's your next goal with him? What's the next immediate goal?
We're going to Twin Rivers next weekend.
Okay. All right. So we're going to be looking for updates on how you did. Okay.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Gina. This has been fun.
You're so welcome. It was super fun. You guys have a great day.
For first-time horse owners and new riders just starting out, finding the information and support you need can be challenging. That's why Equine Network has partnered with Sentinel Feed to bring you My New Horse, a place where equestrians just getting into horse ownership or riding will find the resources and community they need at precisely their stage of the equine journey. From important horsekeeping information and how-to videos to social media communities and more, My New Horse is your one-stop shop for riders of all levels and disciplines who are eager to find easy-to-understand horse care information and guidance. Start your horse ownership journey today. Visit mynewhorse.com.
Well, Auditor Jennifer of R&B Quarter Horses in Michigan is hosting a clinic on May the 1st that sounded absolutely fascinating. It's called Horse Brain Science, and it's with neuroscientist Dr. Steve Peters and clinician J.P. Dial. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And good morning.
So, Dr. Peters, let's start with you. For listeners who may not be familiar, what is horse brain science?
If you stop and think about it, everything that your horse does, everything that it perceives, every movement it makes, the entire control is through the brain. So understanding the brain and getting away from the guesswork, which often is confusing to the person and confusing to the horse. And when you do that, even inadvertently, you're often working against the nervous system instead of working with it. Every horse and human need to be able to focus their attention, need to feel safe, and need to be motivated. Well, there's a whole neurochemistry behind that. Acetylcholine and attention, dopamine and reward, serotonin and oxytocin and feeling safe. And your horse always carries a chemical balance that shifts. And recognizing that, recognizing nervous system state comes before behavior. Behavior is the last outcome. So by understanding your horse's biology, and all horses are different, but they all have brains, they all have the same neurochemistry we have. If you can change and shift that lens and communicate with your horse in a way that's most understandable to their nervous system, it's safer, it's more effective, and it behooves you and helps benefit your horse's welfare. So I began to put together these clinics where we dissect brains, where we look in layman's terms at brain functioning. And then JP's role in these clinics is being able to observe and apply this, because it doesn't help anybody if the science isn't usable. And really, that's what we strive to do, is now you, and it's interesting when these clinics end, people really can't wait to get back to their horse and apply what they've learned. Some people, like Mark Rasha, told me, after going to a clinic with you, I don't necessarily do things any differently. It's just that I understand the why. I knew the how, kind of how to get the horse to do something, but I didn't understand the why. And if you understand the why, then your how can get so much more refined, clearer, more efficient, and in a way that your horse is optimizing their learning. So
that, that's kind of true of all learning too, right? I mean, if we understand the why, you know, of all kinds of learning. The other thing you said too that I thought was interesting is you actually have two nervous systems involved when you're dealing with horses too. Mm-hmm. You have the person and the horse. I mean, and oftentimes not acting the same, right?
Absolutely. And JP will tell you a little bit about that as well, but that's why we have a level one and a level two course that we're going to do at Jennifer's, because when you come into your horse's world, you bring a whole environment, and you really need to be aware of that. Your movement, your voice, your symmetry, all of that is being read constantly by your horse. That's how their nervous systems are designed. So this co-regulation, because if you're not aware of this and unaware of how your horse is reading the situation, if they consider you a threat, they'll predict that this is going to be a threatening behavior. Brains are more predictive than they are thinking. And we're finding that's even more true.
Is it more true in the horse than the human, or about the same?
No, actually, we're finding in recent research, it's the same for us, is that we're constantly, our world is only the world that we've created. I mean, we think we experience the same world as everyone else, but you don't. You know, if you've been bucked off a horse and badly injured, your impression of the word horse might be different than somebody who's romantically thinking that they've seen Black Beauty 37 times, and they have a different...
I would do that. That's weird. I would do that.
I'm not making any judgments here. So there's two different worlds, and you need to read and observe each other's. One of the terms is co-regulation, where the two nervous systems sort of sort each other out so they're able to communicate, versus I'm going to make you do this, sometimes can automatically turn that defensive posture on in the horse and change the neurochemistry, where you can actually make the horse do something, but they're not going to hold the information in the same way. They're not going to be what most people, I think, want, a willing partner. And so, yeah, level two is where they get to see six riders with their horses. So in essence, 12 nervous systems. And that was the design of level two, is to be able to see the horse-human interaction. And so I sort of narrate what's going on in both nervous systems at the same time.
Well, it's like, and you mentioned this, it's like what Monty Roberts says, is like you can, good trainers can make the horses do anything, but great trainers can cause the horse to want to do it. And I feel like that makes such a difference in how the horse retains the information and accepts the information.
Absolutely. Yeah, brains are created by experience. And so what we really want to do is make sure we go out of our way to create a good learning experience. And that's, the horse will tell us if that's what's going on.
You know, that's interesting too, because that comes back to human-to-human reaction or interaction. You have a terrible boss who forces you to do things and doesn't tell you why, and you don't learn anything, right? Or you have that good boss who educates you along the way and motivates you to want to do it. It's as true whether it's humans or horses or whatever.
A question for you. Like, I know talking a lot about how horses learn things, there are sometimes that horses, I'm trying to get people to get some tips here. Can you help us discern, looking at a horse, so many times people say, oh my God, he's so quiet and so calm. But a lot of times what has, in my experience, it's they're shut down via learned helplessness. Is there a way that you have figured out to identify which is which?
Yeah, what you want to do is basically knowing your horse's history is one thing. And also look for symptoms of that. You know, a horse, if a horse is processing and a horse has its ears on you and a horse is licking and chewing, we know that's a parasympathetic response. How do we know that? Well, one of the cranial nerves, number 9, actually is all parasympathetic fibers down to the salivary gland. And so that is one, not the only one, but one way of seeing that a horse is in a parasympathetic mode. If they're sympathetically aroused, oftentimes the head's up above the withers, you know, they get tight in the face, and it's more symptom-based. And once they check out on you, they'll get that sort of glassy, dead eye. Mm-hmm. Shutdown is actually different than learned helplessness. Learned helplessness is basically the horse cannot escape the situation, and they try to escape the aversive situation everywhere, every way they know how. But when they find that nothing works, then they go into learned helplessness and they just stop trying. And sometimes that is lifelong, where they've just quit altogether and are not interested in trying anything because they don't believe it works. And even if you bring them out of that, try to bring them out of that, they're not willing to give that try. Shutdown is a little more temporary. It's I'm on sensory overload here. I don't really know what to do. I'm feeling internally panicked, and I'm just going to shut down briefly here and recollect. I'm glad you bring this up, because mm-hmm. this can be one of the most dangerous situations mm-hmm. where you think your horse is immobile without fear. You think your horse is in park, and you want your horse to be in park, but comfortably in park. But when they look like they're carved of wood and they're checked out and they're very rigid, and you believe that they're in park, once they wake up and come out of that situation, it can be explosive.
Yes, definitely. And I think about this a lot when I am looking at horses that are being offered up for sale, and they're like, oh, he's so gentle, you can do anything. And like, some of us can see like very clearly that that horse is shut down or trained via learned helplessness. And so many times people get this horse home and they're like, oh, I bought the like most trained horse ever. And then it wakes up when they get home because they haven't continued the learned helplessness, tying up all day or whatever they do to get these horses to just completely shut down and or via learned helplessness, I guess the difference, but it happens. And it's so dangerous for people. And it's dangerous for the horse's future as well, because they are then labeled as a dangerous horse, even though they bought a quiet horse.
Yeah. You know, I think when people see changes in the nervous system, sometimes even an expressive horse to some people looks like a horse who's misbehaving. And so, you know, when we use words like disrespect and disobedience, those are abstract concepts. You know, if our horse is doing something that we call disrespectful, then we're doing something to tell the horse that's okay, or we've inadvertently trained the horse to do those things. But the horse is simply the horse with a nervous system that's neutral. A lot of behaviors we really have to take responsibility for, because I ask people, who mixed that cocktail in that horse? You know, how did you mix it with oxytocin and serotonin, where they were emotionally balanced before they went into a learning situation? Or did you fill them full of norepinephrine so they were right on the edge of sympathetic arousal and they came apart on you? You're the one that needed to see. You're the bartender, basically.
So, JP, a question for you. When you start these clinics and you have your riders, you're in there on the ground with them, what's the most common thing you see early in the clinics that there's just no recognition on the rider's face that what's going on? What's the most common thing you see?
And most of the time, people are misunderstanding what the horse is communicating to them. There's so often, and the horse might be looking for a connection, or the person's not present with the horse, And then, you know, let's say the horse nudges him on the nose and you'll watch him correct the horse. I'm like, they're overcorrecting. And then I watch so often people are not recognizing. So what we want to do is teach them to recognize that change in that horse. When that nervous system comes up and it goes down, because when I'm in an expo and I ask how many people in the stands had an accident on a horse, you know, everyone raises their hand, right? And then I'll say, okay, 30 seconds before that, maybe a minute before that, when you reflect back on that, did your gut kind of tell you something wasn't right? And you kind of looked at your horse, you're riding, and maybe ignored it and kept talking to the person riding next to you. The next minute, boom, everything blew apart. Well, that was a change. You recognize the change, but you pushed through it. And so by teaching people to recognize where their horse is, you know, whether they're in a parasympathetic or in a sympathetic, and we're in that window of tolerance, or if they hit that hypersympathetic, that's when everything's already gone wrong. That's where we do not want to be. And I watch so many people just not understanding how their horse is communicating to them. It's not right for us to ask the horse to speak our language. We must speak their language. And that's what Steve is teaching people, is how the horse communicates through their nervous system. Then I see so often too, everyone, it's like, oh my God, I don't want my horse in a sympathetic nervous system. I'm like, yes, you did. That means you're interested. That's arousal. Curious. When we're learning, like right now, Steve and I talking about this, we're in our sympathetic nervous system. Now, we're not in our hypersympathetic. We haven't crossed over that
line. We can get you there. Give us time.
But you know, teaching people to come and bring the horse back down and up. But I've noticed so many people out there, you know, they're chasing horse around the round pen. They're keeping their horse way up there in the hypersympathetic. And I got that cocktail going on. They got too much tequila in that glass. And then you see another group where they're just afraid to get the horse into the sympathetic. And now they're staying, you know, in this too low in the parasympathetic nervous system. And then they end up as a horse that's avoiding everything. So once they understand why the horse is communicating, why they're doing what they're doing, then people can learn to apply this into the everyday handling of the horse, not just in the arena, not just in that dressage court. But that can apply to everything we do and understand why the horse is doing what it's doing and communicate better. And instead of breaking that trust by overcorrecting the horse when no correction was necessary, the horse is like, oh my God, you're speaking my language now. And trust happens. And then I see it everything from the weekend warrior trail horse to the Grand Prix dressage horses that I work with.
Well, it's funny, too, because we have the rider who's also trying to think about their riding and how they're riding and where their body is. There's a lot going on when you're riding. You know, it's what makes it one of the most complicated sports out there. It's because we are not only trying to focus in on the horse, but we're trying to focus in on ourselves, mm-hmm. too, you know, especially, I think, when you're at lower levels and you're learning to ride. And, you know, a lot of that becomes muscle memory after a while, and then you can focus more on the horse. But boy, when it's a lot going on when you're first starting out.
It is, and that's what we talk about. You know, we have two nervous systems in there. And I used to work with men who are incarcerated and teaching them how to train Mustangs that we adopted to law enforcement into the...
Jamie adopted one of those out of the prison.
So. Oh, great.
Couple of them.
What was so wonderful about that is, you know, I have two nervous systems that are starting below the baseline there, right? And I taught the men in the program the same stuff that we're learning from Steve, and they were able to apply it. And then you watch it transform into their own life. And so you're dealing with multiple, it's not just a horse's nervous system. As you were describing, you got someone else up there in the saddle, maybe they're low level and they're concentrating on stuff and they're nervous or whatnot. So you have our nervous system is communicating with the horse's nervous system. We're sitting on their back. And that's like the defense muscle. You know, it's important for us to co-regulate with the horse. And if we're nervous, the horse is probably going to get nervous.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it always just transfers right over. So I want to say real quick before we let you go, because we've run out of time and I know you guys have stuff to do, but I want to say that if anybody just joined at the moment that Glenn said I adopted something from prison, it was not men. I feel like we should clarify that kind of got hung out there.
That's funny. All right, we'll put a link actually to the clinic that's coming up at Auditor Jennifer's place, and we'll put a link to that in our show notes. Go directly to it. And also, we're going to have Jennifer. She's going to be on in our post show today for the auditors as well. So thank you guys for joining me. I know one of you had to change plans for travel. We do appreciate it. We'd love to have you back when we have time to do a longer segment. That would be great.
Well, we appreciate it. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
War thanks, Eagle.
Go Dogs.
Whether you're hauling to a show, heading to a clinic, or just clocking highway miles, fuel costs add up fast. U.S. Rider diesel savings, powered by open roads, can save you up to 50 cents per gallon at thousands of gas stations across the country. High mileage drivers could save more than $700 a year. It's free to join, and as a gift from U.S. Rider, you'll get free priority processing when you sign up. Head to myopenroads.com/USRider to start saving today.
Well, Jamie, the end of show today, I try and do something upbeat and uplifting. I have something different for you today. All the weather that's out there, they've come out now with the hurricane names for this year. And we're only 100 days away from hurricane season, believe it or not, as everybody's buried in snow. But I thought, let's go through some of these names and see if it sounds like it's going to be a mean, nasty hurricane, or how could that be a hurricane name? It's so nice.
Do they start every year with the A and they go all the way?
All the way to like W in this case. Okay, so Arthur. I'm on the fence about Arthur. I think Arthur could be a serious hurricane.
No, Arthur's the aardvark in the kids' TV show.
Oh, see, and I, yeah. Okay.
Piece of cake.
Bertha. I think Bertha could be mean. I think Bertha could be mean. And I apologize to anybody named Bertha, but just.
Are we in the post show right now?
No, we're in the main show.
That's going to be a big old problem.
Bertha, I think could be tough. Could be a tough one. Cristobal. I don't know anybody named Cristobal.
Cristobal.
Do you know any named Cristobal? I didn't even know that was a name.
They do lean away from American.
Except for the next one, who cannot be a nasty hurricane, Dolly. How can Dolly Parton? She's the nicest person in the world. She's the queen of the United States. Dolly's going to be a fizzle. It's going to go out to sea and not affect anybody.
No, see, here's the problem. Dolly's such a big personality.
Oh,
you know,
I didn't think about that. Okay, I'm going with mine for Dolly. I like it better.
I like yours better too. Yeah. I hope you don't meet any of these people. Okay.
Then we have Edward. We have Faye. Again, another name, Faye. How can Faye be bad?
Faye's like a little sweet old lady name, yes. You know, or like a name of just your good friend.
Yes, I agree. Gonzalo. I think we're in trouble with Gonzalo. It's just one of those names. There's another one in here too. And Hannah. Did you ever see the movie Hannah?
I did not, but I had a student named Hannah and she was trouble.
Well, this Hannah, the Hannah in the movie, she was an assassin and a killer. So I'm worried about Hannah, to be honest. Josephine is another one. I don't see a nasty storm named Josephine. Josephine's a fizzle, going to be out to sea. Then, you know, Dr. Wendy, her significant other is named Kyle. And Kyle is also on the list. Now, Kyle is thoughtful and a great cook. So I don't know what that means about this hurricane. But it's going to be a thoughtful hurricane. Thinking. It's going to float around a while. It's going to tease us, and then it's going to go out to sea. That's what I'm predicting.
I think you're overthinking all of this, but go ahead. Keep going.
We live in hurricane territory. Leah, Marco. Marcos, I don't know. Mark. And then this is the one that gets me. Nana. Who the hell names a hurricane Nana?
My mother-in-law, that's what everybody calls her.
Everybody calls everybody's mother or grandmother Nana. I get how Nana can be a nasty hurricane.
It can be. It's my mother-in-law.
Omar, Paulette, Renee, Sally. Again, Sally can't be a bad one. Teddy, on the other hand, teddy bear. How can a teddy be a bad hurricane? They, you know, just think of a squishy teddy bear.
I don't know. I think Hurricane Sally's going to kick your butt.
All right. So if we had to pick one, then there's Vicky. There are a lot of regular names on this year. And then Wilfred. Well, I don't know anybody named Wilfred since 1900. So which one's going to be the worst? If you had to pick, if we had to guess, which one's going to be the worst this year, judging by name alone, like I pick racehorses.
Name alone, Bertha. You're screwed.
Bertha. I'm kind of with you almost on Bertha. I think either Bertha or Marco. One of those two. Marco just sounds bad. So yeah, Bertha or Marco. That's what we're predicting.
Cheers to nobody having any issues with hurricanes or tornadoes, because tornado season starts in a couple weeks here. So I don't want to.
We're just getting through the winter.
You just run.
You know, we need a break. Spring used to be your break, but it's not a break for you anymore.
Spring used to mean flowers blooming and roses coming up and grass growing and bugs hatching, you know, all the typical spring things. Yes. And here in Oklahoma, it means
duck.
Don't kill us.
Duck cars in the garage.
How many times I've heard David Payne from Channel 9 going, all right, if you're in Norman, you're heading to your shelter. Head to the shelter.
He just has it recorded now and just plays it. We're joking, but there's a lot of people buried in snow and everything else right now. So we're thinking about all of you. That's it.
They're having like a hurricane snowstorm up in the Northeast. Oh, you poor people.
Tomorrow on the show, Solange is here with her riding episode. That's the special episode we do once a month for riders. And she's talking about riding in your older ages. So she'll be here. She's very thoughtful. I love her. And then we have a travel episode later in the week. And Jamie and I are going to be here. We have some weird news. Send it to weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com and get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com for really bad ads on Friday. Hold on, everybody. Auditor Jennifer is joining us in the post show. Play music.
Spay, neuter, geld. There, that kicks it on.
Yeah, see? It does. It's waiting for you.